Welcome back to another edition of Kennel Club Holistic Healing Hour. I'm your host and moderator, Grandpa Bill. Show will be about an hour today, and we're going to take a little detour right a tiny bit from the norm that we usually do here. Going to have, hopefully, some perceived fun. Going to take a look at Oedipus from Greek mythology, and kind of do an adaptation with a real stretch pertinent to the death of a salesman, both the play and, of course, the book written by Arthur Miller, with Lily Loman being the chief character in that adaptation. Oedipus, the King, is Greek tragedy by Sophocles and was first performed in 429 BC, whereas, of course, Death of a Salesman was 1949, which was a very, at the time, controversial play slash book by Arthur Miller. And the two plays in the adaptation, Oedipus, if you will, can compare with Death of a Salesman in a number of ways, despite being written in different historical times, the underlying themes, if you will. So despite the fact that Oedipus is not formally divided into scenes and acts, such as Shakespearean types of plays in most instances, if you will, occurs in six phases, with the transitions between the episodes marked by an actual ode sung by the chorus or the stasimon, while Miller's plays was actually divided into two acts with a regimen at the end, a requiem at the end. Personal choice, preference, adaptation, whatever. As far as a play, if you've never seen the Dustin Hoffman adaptation of Lily Loman, for my two cents, I would highly recommend that. And that may be the theme after break here, as we have some fun taking a real stretch on comparing Oedipus and the Death of a Salesman, Lily Loman, and how it ties into basically the underlying theme of, let's wait till after the break. We'll whet your appetite. We'll be right back. Thanks for joining us. Okay, folks, welcome back after the break, and thanks for joining us. So there's, of course, lots of information at your library or what have you, but for sure on the internet about Oedipus. The one that I'm going to be doing a lot of referencing to in this particular segment of today's show is from a website called UK Essays. So I'll be talking a lot about the material there for my references here. And then once again, after, another 10, 15 minutes when we go back to break, when we come back in the third part of today's show, I'll expand more about my reach of the two comparisons between the two plays and what I'm ultimately intimating for the theme of the thought process for today's show. So hanging with me on that, I'm trying to create a puzzle along the way, if you will. Goes back to our verbal challenges that I like to try to do every day, self-serving for my own brain fog brain. So I throw them out when I do these shows to the audience where applicable, brain teaser type of things, if you will. So stay with me, and hopefully this will make some semblance of sense to the ultimate puzzle resolution, if you will. So As far as Oedipus, the tragic character in the Sophocles case, that character can be perceived and interpreted as quite tragic, a protagonist as that character in that play adaptation. And if you flip that over and look at Willy Loman, those of you that are familiar, you know The Death of a Salesman, either the book, the play, or both. That salesperson is a very tragic hero in the instance of an intimation of the name death of, by having to actually kill himself to be able to provide for his family via the life insurance is the underlying theme with the Willy Loman Death of a Salesman. And the Oedipus character in the Sophocles kind of sort of has a similar underlying theme and character, again, point being with oh so many hundreds of years between the two playwrights, it's so coincidental with that kind of the years, multiple hundreds of, how it kind of had the same underlying theme, if you will. Interesting. I just found that fascinating. But the character of Oedipus is the protagonist and is the tragic in this comparison at this interpretation, at the UK Essays interpretation on the World Wide Web for one source of information. We'll be referencing other ones by show's end. Thank you. So, after his father, Oedipus, that is, Laios, from an oracle that his own son would kill him, he goes on to bind the feet of his infant son in the play. Oedipus, in the order, the mother, Jocasta, to kill him. However, Oedipus is rescued from and by a shepherd and taken to Corinth, where he is raised by Polypus, the king of Corinth, at his own. I'm sorry, as his own son, if you will. Oedipus is an endeavor to avoid his fate of eventually killing his father and marrying his mother, which he learns from an oracle, and it leaves Corinth so as to spare his parents the harm he is destined to met on them. And the jargon, of course, is unique to, I don't know, the 1600s when this was written. So now flash forward to like 1945-ish for a minute, if you will. In the same light, now this is a tiny bit of a stretch, but stay with me. In the same light, Willy Loman, of course, is the tragic protagonist in that play, book, adaptation, as seen in the very last part of the play, The Requiem. And again, my personal two cents, many fine actors and so forth have done the role. My personal favorite's Dustin Hoffman. It's just like he is Willy Loman. He truly embellished himself and ingrained himself in the role. It's a fascinating dissertation. So, the words of Charlie serves to remove the blame on Willie in the book, in the play, Willy Loman, and places it on the requirement of American society. That's our underlying theme. We'll get back to that before show's end. Remember those words, please. The American society to chase the American dream at the expense of a person's emotional and spiritual well-being. That's from Arthur Miller's play, The Death of a Salesman. And our point is it's pretty prevalent in today's society, whether you're a salesman per se or not. chasing the proverbial American dream. And as all my shows, regardless of the subjects, go from a then and now premise, business-wise, with the connotations of whatever I did then, pertinent to the subject, business-wise, and however long or far ago that was, in whatever facets of my career over the years, plural, to fast forward now. So business connotation-wise, there's that element. Told you it was going to be a brain teaser. So there's that element, business-wise, chasing the American dream. Be it me, you, the man in the moon, 1949, 1900, 10 minutes ago, the American dream, the American dream, what we were led to believe was the American dream. What is it now? That's the underlying theme for today. So before the end of the show, in the closing episode, as best as I could be a storyteller slash author for you, again, I'm just the hopeful conduit of the information in all instances of my broadcast, regardless of the subject matter, most assuredly in this one. It's hopefully to intimate the concept of these two characters in the plays that were written so many centuries apart and how coincidentally they are of the same subject. Fascinating, as Mr. Spock from Star Trek would say. So Oedipus is an endeavor to avoid his fate of eventually having to kill his father and marrying his mother. That was his dilemma. He was trying to avoid what he was betrothed or whatever, if you will, what was his destiny, which was a fervent belief at those times, because it came from an oracle. Mythology, you know. Sophocles. All right, so now flashing back to Willy Loman for a second. So you have the same characterization, if you will, with a different twist. Willy Loman didn't have to kill his son, but it was a event that you have to read the book, follow the play. It's a very literally and figuratively long story, but it was what he aspired for as the sad American dream, which he, for a number of reasons, could never personally attain. And he was aspiring to have his son follow in his own footsteps. And his son wanted to go into a different direction and blah, 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 blah. And he had that disappointment. And then he had the disappointment of not being able to literally, totally provide for his family. And he was of the conviction that there was always going to be the next sales, or sale, if you will, venture that was going to solve all his problems. And it was a tragic death of a salesman. And he literally came to loggerheads where he, in the last scene, brought that soul home, killed himself for the life insurance to provide for his family. So the last part of Willy Loman, stay with me. Okay, we're there now, hopefully. Thank you. So the words of Charlie serve to remove the blame on Willie, and it places it on the requirement of the American society to chase the American dream at the expenses of persons' emotionally and spiritual well-being. This was in 1945 by the author Arthur Miller. I'm simply recantering. I find that fascinating. So the words of Charlie, again, in that soliloquy, his son removed the blame. So he points out the fact that no one deserves the kind of returns that Willie was getting at his grueling salesman's job. Willie, as the salesman, bought into not so much his own sales pitch, but the sales pitch, again, of the American society, work hard, you'll succeed, you'll prosper, you know, that type of thing. Brought the sales pitch. He bought into it. He bought into it, Willie Loman. That was used in the jargon vernacular of the times and the American society to advertise itself. And he paid for it, literally and figuratively, with his own life. So the play about Willie Loman and Death of the Salesman talks about mortgages, pressure, subs, that he couldn't meet it and what have you. Brand names and big multinationals about the business itself and the next sale and the exhilaration of aspiring to, you know, if A plugs in to B, you know, salesmen, if it happens, this can happen, and oh my God, this will be great, and all that kind of stuff. So at the end of the day, in that genre, in that era of history, which was depicted through the playwright of that era, of that character, is able to afford his family a house in a decent living, and even believes that he would be worth more dead than alive. Thus is why he made the decision. He believes that Biff, his son, would benefit from his insurance compensation following his death. And backhandedly, that would be his gift to his son in acknowledgement that he understood and accepted that he didn't want to be a salesman or whatever. And that would be his contribution to a hopeful perceived starting his own venture or what have you. Thus was the torment that Willie Loman went through. The protagonist speaks the language of the consumers, and for him, the cutthroat competition of sales, even in that era, was maddening. And he, as the character, via Arthur Miller's brilliant playwriting, in my opinion, in that role of that whole adaptation as the author, Willie represents the American middle class that emerged in the post-war America, a la 1949. So when Linda, his wife in the play, reminds him of the due payment for the refrigerator in one chapter or example, if you will, within the book, the play, Willie says, I told you we should have bought a well-advertised machine. Listen, please, respectfully when I say that, not dictatorial, but please hone in on this point. Charlie bought a General Electric, and it's 20 years old, and it's still new, quoting Willie Loman in the role from one segment of the play, scene, what have you. That son of a bitch, quoting Willie, not my pirate mouth, quoting Willie. Charlie bought a General Electric and it's 20 years old and it's still new, and that son of a bitch, quoted by Miller for Willie Loman in 1949 and then the reprint in 1956 and 57. Point being, from the afford earlier mentioned point, Willie bought into kind of sort of his own sales pitch, but the sales pitch of the American dream, and bought into the advertising. Well, if General Electric makes it, it must be the best one. And his neighbor that he avowed to, well, we should have bought that because Charlie still got his and blah, 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 blah. He bought into the hype. So structurally, both plays, now going back to Sophocles, if you will, they intertwine scenes from the past and the present, be it their past, some 300 years ago or whatever with the specific year for Sophocles, and then Arthur Miller / Willie Loman in the role, or as the character. So when you look at it that way, perhaps everything's in the eyes and ears of the beholder. I'm just recanting kind of how I interpreted it from my version, that's all. So, however, Death of a Salesman depicts events in a sequence that are at odds with their chronological progression. Don't forget, it covers a period of time, the play, within Willie Loman's career of being a salesperson. So the most notable chronological structure of a play has that liner structure characterized by what, you know, you can get heavy as far as terminology of critics or whatever, which, again, I'm just recantering information. I have no credentials, don't claim to have any. I'm certainly not a movie or play critic. It's my own personal adaptation of how I interpreted what I read and saw. That's all. So the most notable, in my opinion, chronological structure of any play liner of any book or play that I'm vaguely familiar with, and I'm not a virtuoso, it's kind of like the proverbial pyramidal pattern that it's supposed to be, as I understand it. I mean, I took a couple of writing courses when I was in college. It doesn't quantify me for anything other than that. Point being is that I remember some of the jargon from the professors of the said class. So this pyramidal pattern in drama, I took a little tiny theater course or something like that. And I remember this pyramidal pattern for those that were aspiring to taking theater as a major or whatever, you know, what they aspired to do. It meant more to them, but I definitely remember that term, if you will. So it means rising action, the climax, the crisis, you know, pyramid within that genre. Like music, the crescendo, if you're going to be orchestral, if you will, the crescendo, another far stretch. In a very lay person's analogy, please appreciate that. I have no experience in this genre at all. A tiny bit of familiarity via reading and enjoying the acting in the said plays, and most assuredly, a career in sales, past tense, that I can avow to. So, however, in Death of a Salesman, the eventual dramatization of Willie, you know, cheating in business that occurs in Boston, it comes late in scene two. If you're not familiar, please, familiarize yourself, and I won't spoil it for you under that premise. Those of you that are familiar, I would just simply refresh your memory to maybe check out and remember scene two. Enough said there to protect the innocent that may not have seen it yet. Here, not letting the proverbial cat out of the bag, if you will. But it's not a new event, as it does not turn the action in a new direction within the context of that genre, and if you were a critic or whatever, using the pyramidal jargon of how they talk in assessing and dissecting plays and the structure thereof within their own circle of fellow authors, if you will, playwrights and so forth. So this is not a new event, as it does not turn the action within the scene of the said chapter of the book / play in a new direction, as it's also not at that time revealed in the occurrence of the character, as both Willie and Biff, without trying to give away too much, for those that are unfamiliar, that might be intrigued enough to seek it out and want to be surprised. Willie and Biff were already aware of it. I think that's a neutral enough statement. And it occurs more when Biff was like 17. Sound familiar? Anybody that's a parent or has been or knows about kids at that age or remembers when you were one yourself, or whatever, 17, 17, 17. And Linda and happy to do not learn about it when they finally dramatize it on stage, within the role. Now, stay with me. I know this proverbial bouncing ball is real hard to follow, but I'll do my best. Please, now let's go back to the Sophocles time frame, where Oedipus has within that structure, even then, pyramidal patterns. I'm pretty old, but I wasn't around 300 years ago. I don't know if they so called it pyramidal. That could be where the name emanated from. That's how naive I am to the subject. It would make sense. Pyramids, the time frame, what have you. But I don't claim to know that factoid, but I know that the same structure, whether they called it that or not, would be a good case in point. When you flash forward and use it under the premise of the jargon that they most assuredly use now. Thank you. That's really, really tough when you really don't have any credentials or experience other than a recreational reader, play watcher. And like 40 years ago, taking the theater class, I mean, it was just a class, no aspersions on it or the professor, but it wasn't my major. It was actually an elective that I chose to take, and in all candor, with no insults or whatever, I thought it would be fairly easy, entertaining, and have some fun and make an elective easy, not challenging, cracking the books wise, if you will, truth be told. So that was then, this is now. But in the Greek tragedy by Sophocles, Oedipus, the tragic hero, suffers misfortunes which are foretold to him in that play by an oracle, and which led to his eventual downfall, because the same far reach of the American dream flashing forward, which was the guiding light of Willy Loman, my term, beacon, belief, he latched on to it, whatever, stay with me. My stretch here, going back to the tragic hero of Oedipus in Sophocles' adaptation, because the oracle carry such prevalence in that era. You know, whatever the oracle said was the way to go. Please understand my underlying theme, the American dream, whatever they said. For a very, very long time, we believed it, right? Hook, line, and sinker for a very, very long time. That's my stretch, my point. On a play from 300 years ago to a play that, whatever, 60, I don't know, what's that math? 70 years ago, something like that. 71 years ago, I used to be able to do that math in my head. So the former, meaning the Greek tragedy, is where Oedipus is indeed the tragic hero. That's a fact, yeah. And his misfortunes are indeed foretold to him by an oracle, which led to his downfall, because he just steadfastly stood true to what the oracle avowed to him, whether it made sense in his soul of souls or common sense, or he just didn't disavow it. He tried to live it, and it did not pan out. So he was fated to kill his father via the oracle. I mean, that's a pretty tough decision to, oh, okay, I'll just do that. And then, are you ready? I didn't write the play. Sleep with his mother. I don't know. Pretty strange, even 300 years ago, but whatever, 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 whatever. That's what the oracle told him. I mean, that's a pretty hard bummer, right? It's not like take your father's shirt and steal your mother's iron or whatever. Right? So that was his dilemma of like taking it face value and the appreciation that the Oracle's all knowing and it's for the greater good and all that crazy stuff. Well, you could see his dilemma, and he was trying to run from it and find a false facade of, well, I really was not like avoiding doing my duty type of thing, if you will, while he was contemplating not having to kill his father and sleep with his mother. Pretty bizarre. So anyway, his fascination with the superficial, because of that time frame, kind of flashing forward for Willie Loman under the guise of the American Dream being his oracle, if you will, far reach by me. So his fascination, Willie Loman, with the superficial qualities of likability and attractiveness is at odds within him internally as well, as a more rewarding and deep understanding of what he perceived as the American Dream, which he kept falsely even trying to convince himself was attainable for himself when he really within himself knew he could never get there. Thus was his dilemma. So his blind faith in the American Dream causes him much psychological trauma to the point where he's unable to make out between the dream and his own real life within the brilliant play that Arthur Miller penned and authored, book and, you know, adaptation via a play. All right, let's take another break. We'll come back and we'll wrap this up. And again, it's more the underlying theme of the thought process, which is good for the brain, which we try to do here. We'll squeeze in a little bit about the histrionics of a body of water, which we always try to do randomly here before shows end. And then we'll come back and try to wrap up this point, as it also hopefully all within the confines of the same show covers the present day premise, as in 2021. What's the American Dream now? And I'm not sure it's via an oracle, but maybe we'll take a look at ideas on that front after we take this series of breaks. We'll be right back. Thanks for joining us.
It's sales, count out, holistic healing hour. Your host and moderator, me, Grandpa Bill. The flawless gem grade spring water, verified naturally pure by science and freely bubbling to the earth's surface right here in Maine since the last ice age. The naturally purest spring water on the face of the planet, directly from the source in pristine Maine. Tourmaline Spring. Tourmaline Spring of Maine.
Cradled deep in the pristine northern reaches of one of the oldest mountain ranges in the world, there's a treasure more valuable than even the precious gems hidden there. It bubbles up of its own accord from deep in the earth, offering itself freely and in abundance. It's completely unaltered by human hands, and that's exactly how we bring it to you. This earthly treasure, Tourmaline Spring Water, is without question one of the naturally purest waters to be found anywhere on the planet. Bubbling up through over 1,000 feet of silt, rock, precious gems, and crystals, it pours forth directly from a geologic phenomenon, a high elevation spring located in the northern Appalachian Mountains of Maine. Not only does our source hold State of Maine premium grade designation, but we are also the only commercially available water in Maine's history to be given exemption from treatment status. This is because the purity levels of our spring exceed all state and federal guidelines for drinking water out of the ground. Our spring water is gravity-fed a mere 50 feet to the bottling house, touching only stainless steel till it reaches our biodegradable bottles. And despite the massive output of our spring, we have what may be the lowest carbon footprint of any bottled water on the planet. It's the crown jewel of spring water. Nothing else even comes close. Tourmaline Spring of Maine.
Great sales, Kennel Cult, Holistic Healing Hour, with your host and moderator, me, Grandpa Bill. Thanks for joining us.
Hey everybody, it's Grandpa Bill from over at the Ankle Radio Show, reminding everyone to please join me 7 days a week. Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and yes, Saturday. We will have topics ranging in scope from holistic healthcare products for both humans and animals, plants, and the planet. Having provocative guests talking about today's subjects in innovative medicines, ranging in scope from CBD products, non-CBD products, earthen-derived clays, vegetables, and the world's cleanest water, Tourmaline Spring. That's Grandpa Bill's podcast show, Anchor Radio, right here, Monday through Friday. Join us. And Sunday, Saturday and Sunday. Bye for now.